This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I have great respect for the Supreme Court, and I want to just thank them for working so quickly and so diligently and so brilliantly.
Yesterday, in a speech at Mar-a-Lago, former President Donald Trump praised the Supreme Court for its decision in the case of Trump v. Anderson.
And they can go after me as a politician, they can go after me with votes, but they're not going to go after me with that kind of lawsuit that takes somebody out of a race who's leading in this case.
The court's ruling on Monday said they believe Trump should remain on the primary ballot in Colorado, despite his role on January 6, 2021.
This was a decision that overturned a ruling from the Colorado Supreme Court in December that said that Trump was disqualified from the ballot in Colorado because of his role in January 6th.
Sarah Ellison is a National Enterprise reporter for The Post.
And the justices said that it has to be Congress and not an individual state to bar someone from appearing on the ballot for national office.
It's a decision that has huge implications for today, as millions of people around the country head to the polls to vote in presidential primaries.
The Supreme Court came out with this decision in an unusually timed way because Super Tuesday is today, and they announced this on Monday because the voters deserve to know who's going to be on the ballot and whether their vote is going to count.
This decision has clarified a big question about Trump's eligibility for office. But it also says something important about the hopes that many Democrats had pinned on the American judicial system in this election cycle.
I think broadly, when you look at the start of the year, the start of 2024, you have Donald Trump, who is facing 91 criminal counts. There's never been a former president that has been charged with a crime. And you have a lot of Democrats thinking that the judicial system will come through and give him some measure of accountability for his role in January 6th, for his effort to overturn the election. And that's just not happening.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers, and it is Tuesday, March 5th. AKA Super Tuesday. Today, I'm speaking with Sarah about the evolving role that the courts are playing in this year's election cycle and whether they'll end up having any impact at all on Donald Trump's bid for a second term in office. So let's talk a little bit more about the details of this decision that came out on Monday. So Sarah, as you started to describe, this was a case that came out of Colorado. Voters there were trying to use the 14th Amendment to essentially keep Trump off the ballot because they argued that he had engaged in insurrection on January 6th and was therefore ineligible from holding office again. But not only did the justices disagree with that, they were unanimous in their decision that overturned the Colorado Supreme Court's ruling. So what did you make of that, the fact that this was something that all the justices agreed on?
I mean, the experts that I talked to said that the Supreme Court unanimously recognized the chaos that would ensue if you allowed an individual state to bar a candidate from the ballot. You could have one decision in Colorado, a different one in Wyoming, a different one in Pennsylvania. And so you wouldn't want to have that kind of patchwork. And also, they didn't want to have an individual state be able to make the decision for the entire country. So Unanimously, the justices realized the real-world implications of a decision like this, and they all rejected that.
What else did you find notable about their decision and the way that they framed it?
Even though the decision was unanimous, there was a divide among the justices. All the justices agreed that they wanted to overturn the Colorado Supreme Court, which had blocked Donald Trump from the ballot. But there was a divide. The conservative justices essentially said that in order to disqualify someone from the ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, Congress had to pass legislation to enable the enforcement of Section 3. And that was the only mechanism that you could keep someone off of the ballot. Now, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is, in fact, a Civil War era provision that was designed to keep Confederate soldiers, people who had literally committed treason against the United States, and then tried to run for office after the Civil War. Section 3 was designed to say, you can't do that. You are disqualified.
And the bar is extraordinarily high for enforcing this in Congress.
One of the things that experts pointed out to me yesterday is that essentially what you're saying, if you look at Congress today and
how non-functioning it is, that to get legislation from the House and the Senate is essentially impossible.
So however you feel about Donald Trump, what the Supreme Court is saying is that the burden is so high, the bar is so high to keep an insurrectionist off the ballot. The worry that I heard yesterday was that you could have insurrectionists running, that they sort of opened the door and made it so hard to block anybody from the ballot, that that was a real concern, that these decisions don't just stop with Donald Trump, they go on into the future.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the consequences that we've already seen play out because of this decision? And I'm thinking about, you know, the many secretaries of state around the country who are like, well, Super Tuesday is tomorrow. Are we or are we not going to have Trump on the ballot?
Absolutely. What we saw immediately was within hours of the ruling, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows withdrew her earlier determination that Trump should be barred from the ballot in her state. And the Maine primary is today. So it's not an academic decision. It's something that had an immediate impact on who voters are going to be able to vote for in this primary.
And did you get the sense that there was some amount of relief about this decision when it comes to the people who are in the position of actually making elections run and the idea of, like, what would it mean and what would it require to, like, pull Trump off the ballot at the last minute?
Absolutely. Even the Colorado Secretary of State said that she was happy that the Supreme Court had weighed in. She expressed disappointment with the decision because essentially this decision allows for an insurrectionist to appear on the ballot, but for the highly unusual circumstance where Congress actually passes legislation to enforce Section 3 to remove that person. And so Donald Trump, love him or hate him, it doesn't matter because this decision will carry forward to other potential insurrectionists. And so there was some relief that this decision was made, but also trepidation about what it was going to mean going forward.
And then we heard Donald Trump's reaction to this decision. Obviously, he was very pleased. What did he make of that reaction? And what do you think this message is sending Trump?
The ball keeps bouncing in Trump's favor. The multiple cases against him are either being delayed or mired under their own weight in certain ways. So for Donald Trump, you know, he declared it a big win for America on social media. And he is now got a sort of glide path to the ballot in November. And this Supreme Court decision has removed yet another barrier to him.
After the break, we dig into those other pending cases against Trump and the chances that any of them could interrupt Trump's glide path to the Republican nomination. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
So, Sarah, you had mentioned that there is going to be another case that the Supreme Court will be deciding related to Donald Trump, in addition to the 91 charges against him in various states around the country. Can you just kind of lay out, like, what are the current legal proceedings that remain when it comes to Trump?
If we're talking about the hopes that certain people had pinned on the judicial system for bringing Donald Trump to account, the biggest blow to those hopes came last week because the Supreme Court decided that they were actually going to hear oral arguments on whether he is immune from criminal prosecution at all. And they decided to set that date for April 22nd.
Notably, the case that really can't go forward before that decision is Jack Smith's federal January 6th case against Donald Trump.
That's essentially going to determine whether Donald Trump was guilty of spurring on an insurrection.
And the fact that the Supreme Court is not going to hear this immunity case until April means that Jack Smith's case wouldn't move forward until after that. That means that it's going to be less and less likely that there will be any kind of conclusion to that case before the election.
Mm-hmm. So that's the federal case. Then, of course, there's, I'm taking them off in my head, the classified documents case in Florida. There is the ongoing case in Georgia about Trump's role in trying to steal the election. And we've heard a lot about the DA there, Fannie Willis, and the sex scandal, and
right.
The fact that she is having to kind of respond to a lot of very difficult questions for her around whether or not she should even be participating in this trial. But then there is the case that's going forward, the Stormy Daniels case, right? Like, that is definitely going to trial, is going to trial soon. And so, like, this could be the big moment where you actually see Trump, you know, face a jury. What is your sense of the role and importance of seeing Trump go to trial in that way?
Well, for people who want to see Donald Trump go to trial and face legal repercussions for his behavior, they may take some comfort in the fact that the hush money case in New York is going to go to trial on March 25th. But that case is generally seen as sort of the runt of the litter or the least important of any of these cases against Donald Trump. This is not about whether he tried to steal an election. It's not about whether he was stealing state secrets or holding on to state secrets after he was supposed to have returned them. It's about whether he paid off an adult film star.
And these are actions that are alleged from before he even became
exactly.
president. So it's really not like a question of like whether or not he performed a crime as president.
Right. And it's not about democracy in the same way that some of these other cases are.
So I want to go back to this question that the Supreme Court will be weighing, which is whether Trump, as a former president, is immune from facing criminal charges. And I'm curious if anything from the ruling that we saw yesterday on this different question about the 14th Amendment, whether that, like, indicates anything about where the court might be thinking when it comes to this question of immunity.
I mean, if you're very cynical about this court, and there's no question that the Supreme Court is undergoing a kind of crisis of confidence. People have paid a lot of attention to different ethics scandals on the court. Obviously, Donald Trump appointed three of the current justices to the Supreme Court, and there is a real sense of disappointment among Democrats and critics of the court that this court is sort of delivering for Donald Trump exactly what he needs at the right time. Certainly with this decision and also with their sort of slow response to the immunity case. Yesterday, the commentators that I was talking to were saying, you know, this court has shown that they can move quickly when they want to. They moved quickly to keep Donald Trump on the ballot, but they're really slow walking this decision on whether or not he is immune from criminal prosecution. And the idea that the Supreme Court isn't going to weigh in on that for almost 2 months is something that I got from people that they were disappointed about. When you looked at however you feel about Donald Trump, you want the Supreme Court to kind of make the decision on the immunity case. And there were some people that I was talking to yesterday that were saying, you know, justice delayed is justice denied. And whether or not they say that Donald Trump is in fact immune and he can't be tried, then at least we know that. But now we're sort of in a waiting game until April 22nd.
I saw a tweet from former Attorney General Eric Holder the other day where he had this line that really stuck out to me. He said, "There is no cavalry coming, no miracle solution, no saviors. In the end, we, the American people, not any of our institutions, have to save our democracy by voting in defense of that democracy this fall," end quote. And I was curious what your sense is of whether Democrats see some of these, like, holdups in court as possibly beneficial, that it kind of adds more emphasis to the idea that, like, no, people have to vote and not wait for some, like, court somewhere to just decide that Trump can't be president again.
His sentiment is absolutely apt here, because what Eric Holder said is exactly what I heard and what we heard in our reporting from certain members of the Biden administration, which is that Biden has said publicly and his campaign has said publicly and privately that their best chance of beating Donald Trump is at the ballot box, and that there's a really strong sense that because Donald Trump is so popular among his supporters, that for another entity to take him off the ballot would feel anti-democratic for the people who want to vote for him, and they want to get a chance to weigh in at the ballot box. And so, in fact, you know, Biden has said and his aides have said, we don't care about this Colorado decision. We don't care about the Supreme Court decision. We want to go to November and go up against Donald Trump again. And there are people who are reading the 14th Amendment and saying Donald Trump is an insurrectionist and we need to keep him off the ballot. But there is a broader sense among certainly the Biden administration and lots of Democrats and certainly Republicans that you have to let Donald Trump run. And if people are going to vote him down, that's the way you keep him from office. You can't look for some other trick or tool or judicial maneuver to do that for you. You have to let people stand up and vote.
Sarah, thank you so much for laying all this out. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Ellison is a National Enterprise reporter covering politics for the Post-Democracy team. As we mentioned, today is Super Tuesday, and Americans in 15 states are holding primaries or caucuses. Of course, what's at stake here is roughly one-third of the delegates that will determine the Republican and Democratic presidential nominations. But that's not all that you should be watching out for. In California, there is a dramatic primary for the U.S. Senate seat that was previously held for more than 30 years by the late Dianne Feinstein. This was clearly expected to be a race essentially just between Democrats. Congressman Adam Schiff is in the race, as are Congresswomen Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. But millions of dollars in last-minute ad spending, along with the possibility of record low turnout, are elevating the chances of Republican Steve Garvey. He is a former baseball star who has barely campaigned in this race. Here's a clip from his interview with Fox News on Monday.
I woke up about 8 months ago and turned the TV on, and I could see a dysfunctional Washington. I could see the country imploding from within because of career politicians, the snarkiness, people who are running for power and not for the people. And I thought to myself, let's run for the U.S. Senate.
If Garvey ends up being one of the two candidates to make it to November, it could end up sidelining the more progressive candidates and fundamentally changing the dynamics of the race. Also, in North Carolina, voters in both parties will be choosing their nominee for governor. On the Republican side, many eyes are on current Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who just received an endorsement from Trump and has been called by Trump, quote, Martin Luther King on steroids. This is Robinson speaking last month at CPAC.
We move forward this year and we think about what's at stake. When you think about that wide open border, when you think about this out of control crime, when you think about this dastardly government that has its head and its rear end instead of being at the helm of the government like it should be.
If Robinson ends up the Republican nominee, it could have a big effect on turnout, which would have implications for the presidential race, too, considering that North Carolina is one of the most competitive states in the country. These races and others are some of what we plan to unpack this Friday on The Campaign Moment, our new weekly conversation about the latest in election politics. You will hear my co-host, Elahe Azadi, talk with Aaron Blake about all the takeaways from Super Tuesday. But if you want more reporting and insights in the meantime, you'll find plenty of live coverage of the returns at WashingtonPost.com. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Alana Gordon with help from Emma Talkoff. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Ted Muldoon. When I don't have time to read something on the Washington Post website, sometimes I listen to it. And it hit me that maybe this is not something that everyone knows is an option. So I want to explain it because it's pretty cool. Almost every article on our website has a little headphone icon right at the top of the page. You just click on that, and sometimes you'll hear the reporter reading their story. Sometimes it will be a computer-generated voice. But you'll be able to listen to the article in its entirety. It's a great way to catch up on what's in the news. Now, we are also serving up articles that you can listen to every day in Apple Podcasts. This is a special offering for subscribers of The Washington Post, and all you need to do is search for The Washington Post channel on Apple Podcasts and connect your subscription. And if you are not yet a subscriber, go to washingtonpost.com/subscribe. I am Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.